Blog Talk Radio.
Because we're the Houston Oilers. Houston Oilers. Houston Oilers number one. Yes, we're the Houston Oilers. Houston Oilers. Houston Oilers number one.
Hello, everyone. You're listening to Ballard Radio. My name is Matt Weston, and tonight I'm joined by the biggest, baddest, drunkest of them all, BFD. Hey, how's it going?
And I'm now pantsless, too, so y'all guys got that going for you. Well done.
Yeah, I'm pretty close to pantsless also right now. Not quite, but almost there. So what we're going to do tonight is we're going to look at the numbers at this point in the season, give some awards real quick, and then preview the Jaguars game. Because the president is being birthed tonight in front of our nation, we're going to make sure the show's just an hour and get out of here as fast as possible, because this is a very important day in all of our lives. So let's go ahead and start first by looking back at the halfway point of the season. I went ahead and looked at the numbers and learned a lot about how Houston has played this year. By doing so. And so the first thing that stood out to me was there's a large difference between performance and win totals. And not much sum up the Texans, I'm just talking about football as a whole. I know we've talked about this before, and I think we kind of stand similarly where you play 16 games, that's a small sample. A lot of crazy things can happen. So even if you play really well, you're more, you know, welcome to having your schedule, you know, derailed by losing one possession games and, you know, having bad turnover luck and those sorts of things. And so they do tend to bounce out over the course of the year. What they don't usually see over 2 years is something like you're seeing with Carolina this year, something that you're seeing with Baltimore after how horrible their year was last year compared to this year. And so right now Houston's 5-3, but they're 4-0 in one possession games. They're 30th in DVOA. They won two more games than expected based off their Pythagorean win total, and they have a point differential of -30, and yet they're still 5-3. And also, the only win they have that wasn't a one-possession game was against the 2-6 Bears. And their three losses were blowouts against teams that were playing great. And usually that's more indicative of, you know, great teams blow out bad teams. And the Texans were on the opposite end of that sort of thing. So, BFT, are you worried at all about this team falling off in the second half of the season?
There's two ways to look at it. So it's the glass half empty or the glass half full. And that's what makes it a hard call, is because is Brock Osweiler really this bad? Is our offensive line just really absolutely this bad? And I don't think so, but I don't have any reason to be overly optimistic. On the other hand, but there's got to be some upside in both of those areas. So that leads us to the stats, the numbers that you're just going, you know, talking about, 4-1 position games, 30th in DVOA. There's going to be regression there too. And so if you put it all together, we have regression here, we have regression there, then you still have a team that's a 4-4 quality team heading into the rest of the season. We're going to beat teams we expect to beat, but we're going to lose to teams that we should beat. And that's how the season's shaping up for me at this point. Are you there?
Yeah, I think I lost you for 1 second. So can you hear me?
I can now. I could hear.
Okay.
Can you hear me?
All right.
And then you disappeared again.
Well, I guess you repeat what you said towards the tail end, because I lost that. What about now?
I can hear you.
All right.
We're back commercial.
Yeah. Hey, that was brought to you by Seymour Butts Malt Liquor. So, I mean, I understand what you're saying. I guess there's just still that possibility of the rest of this, you know, second half maybe not going as well as this first half has, because, you know, they are 5-3. I understand wins are the only thing that counts at the end of it all, but they just haven't played very well. And so I think it's a lot more likely for them to not have this one possession luck, for them to, you know, I could see their schedule becoming tough for games against Oakland and San Diego and Cincinnati. I could see even Indy and Tennessee starting to play better as well, too. So I think it's more likely for them to, you know, drop off towards the end of the year than all of a sudden see them, like, make a jump from, like, 32nd offensive DVOA good as 16th because the performance has been there for eight games, but these kind of like random flukier things are a lot less likely, like more indicative of, you know, what's going to happen carrying on. And so I just don't see – the only numbers really that point to where Houston can improve is how the opponent's special teams have been playing and then also in their turnover differential. And that's really it. And everything else just points to this being a team that's bad who has gotten, you know, pretty lucky these first 8 weeks.
Yeah, I think you're right. It's like one other thing I was thinking about how, as we were talking about this, is how many balls has Brock Osweiler thrown that should have been picked that weren't, and it's a number of them.
Yeah.
And so I'm interested to see how even that sort of luck holds up, because again, life is about regression. It's all about regression to the mean, and there seems to be sometimes a misunderstanding of what that actually means. But you know, getting lucky is not really a skill. Now, some people have it, it's true, but getting lucky really isn't a skill. And so that's where I start to worry about, you know, if Brock's going to throw one to two more interceptions a game than he has in the past, because that's what he's been doing during like throwing time, then that's the sort of regression that, that might come back to bite us in the butt as a team.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, like really all you can look at is just look at what the numbers say. I've researched these regression numbers a lot. Since, like, I guess 2012, 2013, like, I was kind of fascinated by them when I read that Bill Barnwell article, and it just all made so much sense. I'd never understood why teams could be so good 1 year, so bad the next year in the NFL. And it just all really kind of clicked for me. I'd pay a lot of attention to them before. And I know I've read about and talked on this podcast in years past, in 2013 especially, where I was just like, the Texans are 2-14 this year. They don't need to rebuild. They have a lot of talent. They're just having the one of the most unluckiest years of all time. And the next year they won nine games, not because Bill O'Brien's a genius or some sort of warlock, you know, some sort of Alex Jones warlock. It was just because a simple regression there and this being a talented team that faced a lot of bad luck. So these numbers work. You know, I have faith in them. And then just based on what I've seen in the first half, I am kind of afraid for a potential drop-off in the second half. And so now I'm going to read off some Osweiler stats for you. And let me know which one is your favorite. These are all going to be very sad if you like the Houston Texans, or they make you very happy if you don't like Brock Osweiler, depending on who you are. So Osweiler's 27th completion percentage, 59.3%, 30th in longest completion, 53 yards, 32nd in yards in attempt, 5.8 yards, 31st in adjusted yards in attempt, 5.0 yards, 31st in yards of completion, 9.8, 28th in yards a game, 214.9. 30th in quarterback rating, 73.1. 30th in QBR, 50. 32nd in adjusted net yards per attempt, 4.37. 32nd DYAR, which is total value. 32nd DVOA, -28.4%. They tied for third with the most interceptions for nine. So which one of these stats is your favorite of Osweiler's?
It's something that I've really picked up on. This is like a new thing. You know, as you get older and you learn more about the food stalls and the things like that, the things that you find that are important, and to me, is the not only the willingness, but it's the ability to drive the ball downfield, because you have to open up the run game. This is a pass-first league. You don't run to establish the pass. You pass to establish the run. And mm-hmm. Brock has all of a sudden just completely lost any and all confidence in throwing anything but checkdowns. And so when you start talking about the 32nd in yards per attempt and 31st in adjusted yards an attempt, 5.8 and 5, that is just pathetic. 31st in yards per completion, 9.8. I mean, that's throwing the ball 8 yards, letting your guy turn around and get hit. So he is just completely unwilling to push the ball downfield at this point, just simply playing cover man two scheme. We're just putting two safeties over the top of Hopkins and Will Fuller has completely thrown off not only Brock Osweiler, but has thrown off Bill O'Brien, alleged offensive genius, as he can't even adjust to such a basic scheme where, you know, we cannot get the ball down the field anymore. It's pathetic.
Yeah, and also go into those numbers, too, with deep passes. He's 15 for 54 on those throws, and he's below average in yards per attempt and a completion rate. I know in the post I wrote, I kind of went through, and I think he's about like 3 yards an attempt less than what the average is. And each one of those sectors have deep left, deep right, and deep middle. And one of the weird things here, too, it's, you know, he threw the deep ball fairly well against Chicago and Kansas City. He was able to hit deep. He was able to hit Will Fuller. He's made some RI throws to tight ends down the field. But, like, that really hasn't, like, been sustainable at all. He hasn't stuck. And so you think there's any chance at all that he's going to get this deep passing game going again?
I think it's going to be so scheme dependent. Again, we go back to what are we going to do about it, right? Because the problem is our two best receivers really and truly are Will Fuller and DeAndre Hopkins. And so we need to do something different. We lost Jalen Strong now for a couple of weeks. But he was actually part of the problem because he was getting, 2.5 yards per per attempt or something? I'm being slightly facetious. Yeah. So C.J. Fedorowicz is not the most – he should be a great physical tight end if you look at his numbers. But, do we push him to have a bigger role in the passing offense? We have to do something different. The way that you could, attack a cover two man scheme is up the middle and toward the sidelines. But up the middle, I think, is doable. I think hitting the outside sidelines, I think, is a little bit more difficult because I just don't think Brock Osweiler has the arm strength to pull off those kinds of passes. So it's really now it's going to be making adjustments to the scheme that adjust, because the simple letting Will Fuller fly off the sideline and dropping a dime on him was clearly not a sustainable strategy. And the New England Patriots, showed everybody how to stop our offense. And that's, that's there. That's on tape. That's not going to be that's not a do-over now.
Yeah, and also thanks to Belichick for all that money you sent us for asking me the advice on how to stop the Texans offense heading into that game. And, I think my kind of problem with the deep passing game is that, they're just not doing it enough, I feel like. I feel like your thing's just been kind of the middle routes, and then it's just been a lot of staring down DeAndre Hopkins and trying to force-feed him. But, I think Osweiler has the arm strength to do it. It's just the ball placement accuracy isn't there. And so I think he's just so – deep in his head that he doesn't trust his arm and his ability at all anymore to throw those passes. And also with DeAndre Hopkins too, he has 400 less yards at this point in the season than he had last year. He has, I think, 5 less touchdowns at this point. His catch rate is 52%. It was 58% last year with Ryan Mallett and Brian Hoyer at this point in the season. And so, Osweiler can't even throw passes to him with any regularity. And I believe that 6 of the 9 receptions he's thrown have been on passes to DeAndre Hopkins also. And that whole thing has just been so weird as well too. And so do you have any idea why this is occurring? Is it just Osweiler just seeing Hopkins lane his reads or trying to force feed Hopkins? Or why has DeAndre been so much worse with that? Well, it's supposedly a much better quarterback.
Oddly, it's accuracy is what I think. Two things is when you see Brock trying to get it to DeAndre, I see, number one, I go back to where it looks like he's aiming. He's not firing the ball to a spot. It looks like he's trying to just get it to just throw it lightly to a spot to DeAndre instead of firing it. That's a big one. DeAndre also doesn't seem to be creating as much separation this year. I don't know if that's kind of a lack of a give a poop at this point because he's so frustrated. But there seems to be questions about how well he's creating separation. Also, that goes back to the scheme as well. Those are the two things that I see, but it's that lead up to just the overall accuracy of when he throws DeAndre Hopkins. Brock is just a horribly inaccurate thrower. And mm-hmm. the difference between, it's 59.3%, he's not, it's only 7 points below 66% or whatever, however you want to justify. Well, that's not the only marker of a quarterback. It's also the accuracy of not only is it the completion rate, but it's the accuracy of where you're putting the ball on top of your wide receiver. And so Brock really, really struggles to be accurate, to put his guys in a position to first catch the ball and then catch the ball with momentum and to make a play after the catch.
Yeah, and also part of the Hopkins, too, is that he's not a guy who plays a lot of separation. He plays just because he's not really a burner at all. It's a lot about a lot of quick and precise steps and him just reaching out and making plays on the ball. And for Osweiler, not even have the accuracy to get it towards that the half of Hopkins he needs to get it to, where his momentum is taking him, has just been incredible. And Hopkins has saved at least 3 interceptions that Osweiler has thrown as well too. And I agree too. Mm-hmm. I think it is just accuracy with him. And the other thing, too, is the scheme's been different this year for Hopkins because last year, I went back and tried all the targets to Hopkins, and they just put him on one side of the field, put everybody else on the other side of the field like he was a leper or something and just let him go to work in one-versus-one man coverage. And that was just pretty much how they ran him. They just ran, 12-yard routes over and over again where he's just running comebacks and slants and outs and then you know, using double moves to set his deep passes up. But yeah, they just try to get him as 1-1 as possible. And this year he's been playing a lot more like a lot more bunch you know formations. So they've been trying to do things, I guess, to get guys open, and it really hasn't worked at all either.
Yeah, and I think that's another good one is the way it doesn't seem like the route trees are working well together. I think we've also seen several times where two wide receivers wind up in a very you know, small area instead of creating separation from each other. I mean, the point of bunching your wide receivers is to create confusion among the defensive backs and to get them removed from the defensive backs and from the other wide receivers, for Christ's sake. And I think as a team, we do a pretty poor job of that. With the exception of Will Fuller, because he does have a short area burst that he can get himself open in those situations.
Yeah, and also at the route combos, you know, what you're talking about, a short area burst to get separation, is the routes they're running aren't very good for these players. Like, throwing Ryan Griffin in the slot or in the flat and then having, you know, Jalen Strong running a slant past him, that's not a very good route combination at all, you know, for those guys can't even, like, do whatsoever. You know, and so I think we're seeing a lot of that, too. And, like, I mean, if you look at the numbers, all their receivers have a negative DVOA except for Fedora, which is, like, 0.6%, which is 16th for tight ends. They all are, like, I know Hopkins is 45th in DYAR. Everybody else is below that. I know Braxton Miller grades out as the worst receiver, according to DVOA and DYAR, for, like, you know, receivers with less than 20 pass attempts or however it is they separate it. And so, like, nobody has been really, you know, bright spot aside from – you know, Fedorowicz, who's like average tight end according to the numbers, and then Ryan Griffin's the worst tight end in the league. And so it's like heading into the season, everybody's so excited about all the speed. All these receivers can do all these different things, how Bill O'Brien can use them all against matchups and certain defenses to attack them in different ways so that no matter who they're going up against, they should be able to throw the ball because they have all these matchups they can exploit, no matter who it is. And it's all just been the worst offense in the NFL, and none of these guys have been efficient. None of them have had really any strong success at all, and it's all just been, you know, a gigantic mess for this offense so far this year.
Yeah, and every time, you know, Ryan Griffin sees the field, every time Jay Prosh sees the field, a puppy dies. I mean, it's terrible. It's such a waste. They putting them out there, it's just, okay, we give up on this play with these two guys, or this guy. We give up on the play. Don't even pay attention to them because they suck so badly. They shouldn't be on the field. Don't even bother covering them. We're going to just tell you that. And that seems like, you know, that it's ridiculous using those two guys at all. And I have a big problem. I realize Steven Anderson is young, but he is really your best receiving tight end, and I think he should be getting more reps. Why Ryan Griffin gets a single rep over Steven Anderson is far beyond my ability to understand.
Yeah, he's like the Raheem Moore tight ends this year, and it's like Steven Anderson – is Andre Howell in a way. But, I mean, in the past, you don't have anything else to say. But in the run game, there's only really – well, there's two things to stand out. One, Jeff Allen's really bad. The Texans went from, like, 16th in yards per carry and just in 1 yard over the right tackle. And, you know, whenever you're running double teams, Jeff Allen has a big part of that on the right side. And I think it has more effect to do with him because Derek Newton started the same spot all year than it has to do with because the one difference is, you know, Jeff Allen – so they went from 16th to 32nd in just in line yards and yards per carry, and that's because of Jeff Allen. He's been, you know, so bad this year. But the other thing that's really stand out, and I think is more important, is this.
You completely disappeared.
And I really can you hear me now?
I can. Yeah.
Hello.
Just came back.
Okay. Yeah. And so the Texans, just the distribution of their runs. Entering last week, they led the league in runs up the middle. And they pay Lamar Miller all this money. He's an outside zone back. He likes to cut back, likes to use his vision, and likes to, you know, get in space. And so right now, he runs up the middle. Lamar Miller has 101 carries for 377 yards, which is good for 3.73 yards a carry. And then behind the same offensive line, Alfred Blewett, 32 carries for 159 yards. And that's 4.97 yards a carry. But then on outside runs, Lamar Miller has 52 carries for 260 yards and is averaging 5 yards a carry. And so kind of fix this problem, BFD, do you want to see more outside zone for Lamar Miller, or do you just want to see kind of more carries for Alfred Blue, where you're getting Blue, you know, maybe 10 carries up the middle, 12 carries up the middle, and then using Lamar Miller for, like, outside runs and those sorts of things?
I think this is a very classic case of not – again, you know, I have about this time of year, it seems like I just get completely fed up with Bill O'Brien. That's just really all there is to it. And I'm good with that. I can admit that. Because it's kind of like we're in the same position this year that we were last year, that we should be a playoff team. We should be doing better. But we're not showing up for 3-4 games a year at all. And we're really relying upon the suckiness of the rest of the division to succeed. And I think this Lamar Miller, Alfred Blue situation is a perfect case of that. Does he really not understand what his running backs are good at, what their talent is? I get it. Lamar Miller has not looked great this year. But Lamar Miller is not the guy you want doing a dive. I mean, he's just not. You want to get him outside, let him make cuts, let him do things that he's successful at. Alfred Blue is a straight-ahead runner. Let him do that. So the fact that we're wasting Lamar Miller on just slams up the middle is just a completely ridiculous use of your talent. I mean, this is a guy who is fast. He's large, but he's not huge. Alfred Blue is huge. Get him the carries in the middle. Get him on the fourth and one, the third and two. That's the guy you want going up the middle. First and 10. I want Lamar Miller toting the rock for me, and I don't want him running inside a guard anymore because it's not been successful.
Yeah, and I think with Miller too, like his vision, like how much he looks for a hole, can kind of hamper him sometimes instead of just running straight forward. But again, like he's so good at that aspect of his game, and that's what made him so successful in his entire career. Like you're not trying to say, oh yeah, we're just run up the middle as hard as you can over and over again. It's just such a waste of your assets, and it's kind of just preposterous. Like, looking at the numbers, it's just so obvious. And but there, it's just like you have a coaching staff and you have these people who are very smart who know a lot about football, a lot more than I do. And it's just like, look at some numbers and open up a book. And these things aren't like super difficult to see. You know, I just went in Gameplay Finder and looked at the data. And like, you have to have somebody that you're paid to do that and look at these things. And so I think it's just like O'Brien is so rigid and sometimes in like the way he wants to scheme and use guys, regardless of, you know, what their skill set can be at times too. But I mean, as far as the run game goes, like I think it's the run blocking has been better than it was at the start of the year off. They've gotten better, but it's just been a complete, just like breakdown how they've used their players.
Yeah, I agree. It's so incredibly frustrating. Anyway.
Yeah, and so we'll look at the defense now. And so defensively, Texans are playing about the same with Watt than without him. And I mean, like obvious, I guess it's a lot closer than what you would imagine. So right last year they finished 6th in DVOA. At this point in the year, I think they're like 16th, and they have that really awful start. And right now that they're 12th in DVOA. But when you look at points allowed per game, they're just as where they were at last year. And so the biggest reason why this has happened is the secondary. They've allowed only 6 passing touchdowns, which is 30th, 5.2 yards a pass, which is tied for 7th, 5.9 net yards in 10th, which is 5th, 11.2 yards a catch, which is 18th. They're 8th in pass defense DVOA, even without Kevin Johnson. And kind of the really strange thing about this is really has a lot to do with A.J. Bouye. He has a success rate of 63%, which is 30th. He's allowed only 4.3 yards a pass, 23rd, and only 1.1 yards after the catch. And they've also targeted him 30 times. And the only problem this secondary has had is just covering other receivers. So, like, wide receivers 3, 4, and 5. And I think they're 26th in the league at that. And so, BFD, is A.J. Bouye the biggest surprise at this point in the season? Or is it just overall how well the Texans defense has played without J.J. Watt?
It's a little both. I mean, you can't – what's really been surprising to me is that we're not getting the same kind of pressure on the quarterback. And normally when you don't get as much pressure on the quarterback, then that creates problems for your secondary. But our secondary somehow has been able to overcome for that. And I think that's pretty amazing. And Bouye is a big reason why. Kevin Johnson was a big reason why. Getting Kareem Jackson back healthy, even though he's been below average, especially for him this year, you know, he's had moments, and still nobody tackles better in space than Kareem Jackson. So it's a surprising turn of events. And this is one of the things, too, is, you know, we talk about the regression part. Is that, you know, are we getting lucky from this right now? Is there a luck factor in here? Or is this a skill factor? And so if we continue to not do such a great job getting to the quarterback, we continue to do a pretty poor job creating turnovers, is even our defensive play sustainable for the next 8 games? And I think that's a big question.
Yeah, I think the defensive play is Like, I mean, the whole point of DVOA is to just really try to capture performance, you know, per every set, every setting and situation. Looks at the average based off the, you know, the it looks at how much better, how much worse you play against a certain baseline for every situation that you're in. And I mean, really, like the only, like I've looked at the third down numbers, you know, the buy down numbers, and just looking at everything, there's really nothing that points out that their play has been really fluky. Even the schedule doesn't show it. And like the, it seems like it should get better just because they've only forced 6 turnovers this year, which is 26th in the league. And last year they forced 25 and they were, I think, 12th in the NFL. So it may just be one of the seasons where they don't force a lot of turnovers, but you would expect that they should force some more later as the year progresses. And I think that there's an opportunity for this defense to play better. But yeah, I do think the one kind of, the one hampering I see is just the pass rush. They're having to blitz a lot. They're having to manufacture stuff in the middle just because they haven't been able to, you know, have the guys beat one versus one blocks. But yeah, I mean, Boulay has just been simply, you know, remarkable this year. And I would never have, like, I could have seen him become like a capable slot corner, but I could never see him becoming like a lockdown number two corner and be able to step in for Kevin Johnson as well, that he, as well as he has.
Yeah, and one other thing to consider when it comes to is the quarterbacks that we play. I mean, we haven't played the highest talent caliber quarterbacks in the NFL so far. So, it, you know, there's a little bit of a luck factor, you know, just from that perspective, I think. You know, we didn't get to play Tom Brady. We played Jacoby Brissett. Of course, he still beat us. But, you know, that's one of the things that we haven't, you know, we get to play Blake Bortles twice a year. We get to play the waste of Marcus Mariota, you know, twice a year. So that's when I, when, yeah, I kind of look at it. So, you know, Cutler, Alex Smith, Jacoby Brissett, Marcus Mariota, Sam Bradford, LOLOL. But we lost to him. Andrew Luck, who's still just so hot and cold. Trevor Siemian, Matt Stafford. You know, Matt Stafford is really pretty easily the best quarterback on that list. I mean, if you look at the second guy, you know, you got Andrew Luck, who's fine, but he's still not, definitely not elite. But the next guy on that list is Alex Smith, and he's fighting for his job against Nick Foles, of all people. So that's not a great group of quarterbacks that they've played so far this year. Let's look at the rest of the season. Blake Bortles, LOL. But then Derek Carr, Phillip Rivers, Aaron Rodgers, Andrew Luck, Blake Bortles again, LOLOL, Andy Dalton, and Marcus Mariota. So that's a tough set of quarterbacks. So that's going to be a real challenge, I think, going down the stretch.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And I really overlooked that as well. And I just looked at their future schedule numbers, and I think they're like 22nd or something like that. Everyone in the AFC South is pretty bunched closely together. But I do think like San Diego is underrated. Cincinnati is. I think Green Bay is too. And I think Cincinnati and Green Bay have really underperformed based off their talent level also. And speaking of Nick Foles, you know, real quick, I was watching the condensed game against Jacksonville. And Nick Foles reminds me just like Brock Osweiler. Like, it's so strange just like how similar they look in the pocket, how inaccurate they can be at times, how they can throw the occasional good deep ball. But just like, how just, I mean, they just look so similar, just the way they look on the field. It was strange. Did you notice anything at all like that too whenever you watch Nick Foles play last weekend?
Yeah, it's kind of funny. I would love to see Brock Osweiler drop a 27 touchdown, 2 interception year on us, or whatever it was, that crazy year for Nick Foles in 2014.
Yeah, the impossible.
Yeah, 2014. Yeah. I don't see that as possible. There's a lot of scheme oriented, you know, goodness there. But they do look a lot alike. They're that's a really great point.
Yeah, just aesthetically. And also, if you're, you know, kind of, you don't know if numbers are good or not, look at Nick Foles' season that you just talked about, where he had an interception rate of like 0.7%. The next year, I think it jumped to 4% because the interception rate of that low is not sustainable for a player like that. Josh McCown had the exact same thing in Chicago. His like average, his career interception rate was like 4%, 3.7%. That year in Chicago, I think he threw 2 interceptions and he just threw it to Alshon Jeffrey and Brand Marshall over and over again. They almost made the playoffs. He had like a 1% interception rate and it jumped to like jumped back to his career average in Cleveland next year. So there's certain things that, you know, statistically over time they've been proven, you measure certain things. I think Foles is kind of so Osweiler, and it's strange. Or maybe Osweiler is so Foolish. I don't know.
Foolish.
There we go. And, yeah, five foolish. Just be foolish. And the last number here I have, too, is just the run defense. So the biggest drop-off for the Texans defense has come against the run. And right now teams are just running away from Jadeveon Clowney. They're having success everywhere. So we'll look at yards per carry here. Against on runs to left end, 7.62, that's 31st. Over the left tackle, 2.37, which is best in the league. And Jadeveon Clowney primary plays right defensive end. Up the middle, 4.16 yards a carry, 22nd. At the right tackle, 4.69 allowed, that's 21st. At right end, 5.7 yards a carry, which is 27th. Now, the real kind of key here is that they've only run the ball 9 times at Jadeveon Clowney this entire year. So pretty much all they're doing is just running the ball everywhere else. And then with Watt last year, I believe that at left tackle they were first, up the middle they were 9th, and over right tackle they were 5th, and just in line yards. And with Watt and Clowney both there, Watt, I think, primarily is the biggest reason because he makes plays all over the line of scrimmage no matter where he lines up. And Clowney's been able to hold down that edge. He's able to chase them backside some, but not at the rate that Watt is able to. And so they're just getting gashed all over the place. And so do you see this run defense improving at all, or is this just going to be kind of norm with Clowney at defensive end, there being a complete black hole at left defensive end, and then John Simon playing the other outside linebacker position? And also the kind of the tiring, Vince Wilfork's probably tired right now sitting on the couch.
I do see this as a trend that continues because we don't have the bodies on the team unless somehow C.J. Reeder can step up and get more snaps instead of Vince Wilfork. Because Vince Wilfork is now he's dinged. He has not looked good again this year. He's had moments, of course, but he has not looked good overall this year. But J.J. Watt's, the best run-stopping right end or, defensive end in football today, and that's who we lost. Wilfork doing nothing. You're not getting good play once again from your other defensive end. Now we've got Clowney there. So Clowney's good against the run, but clearly teams have learned, hey, as long as I don't run at this guy, I'm going to be in pretty dadgum good shape. So you can scheme for that. And J.J. Watt is such a transcendental player that you can't scheme. You can say, look, I'm going to run away from him, but he's going to get you on the back end. So, this is a guy who you can't replace J.J. Watt. And, we talk about getting to the pass rush, we're not doing a good job. The numbers may be holding up, but just the eyeball test tells me that we are not as good of a defense with J.J. Watt. And I'd like to congratulate myself for making the most obvious statement ever on this blog, podcast. I mean,
hey, that's why you pay the big bucks is to make, statements like that.
That's right.
Score more points than the other team is a good thing to do.
That's how you win. That's how you win, baby.
And the wins are the only stats that end up counting at the end of it all as well, too. But I mean, everything you say is true. I am interested. I think the biggest thing I'm interested in as the year progresses is what you said about the secondary and the pass rush. Like, can the secondary keep playing at this crazy level that it has been? And also, if the secondary can, improve at all, because the last few weeks it's been kind of stagnant, and it seems like the blitzes that Cornell has used have kind of slowed down some. And, like, that Lions game especially, they weren't beating their, men one versus one at all. They're playing kind of like a soft zone to be able to come up and make tackles. But, the passes weren't super quick coming out of there. And just Clowney and Merciless haven't been able to beat one versus one blocks. And there's nobody else really stopping from those two, too.
Yeah.
And so, the other thing here also is that the Texans are last at special teams DVOA again. And also, somebody pointed out in the comments of the article I wrote that the Lions, and Joe Marciano is their special teams coach, are fourth in special teams DVOA right now, too. And so it doesn't matter who the Texans put out there or what they do, they're last in DVOA. And I think – I really think the only thing that's consistent between last year and this year and the year before is just the kicking. Nick Novak and Shane Leckler, this has been their third year kicking here. And the Texans are last in punts. I think they've lost 10.1 points this year on punts. They're negative 1.2 on kicks. They're negative on kickoffs. The only thing they've had, they're positive at all that, is punt returns. That's mostly because Will Fuller returned a touchdown, 4 weeks ago to beat the Titans. But, I just think the kickers have a lot to do with it. But other than that, I really don't know. I don't have the ability to watch special teams film and, pay attention, but also watch special teams film and know exactly why this stuff is so screwed up. But I guess also having Brian Peters, make kickoffs is probably part of that. Or, going trips left with C.J. Proche on a punt and with C.J. Proche as a gunner. or Jay Prosh as a gunner, I think that's kind of a big problem there too as well. But no matter what they've done, it still sucks, and I don't see it ever changing ever. Hey, can you hear me? Hello.
I was on mute the entire time. What a dork.
Yeah, that's why I thought it happened.
Oh my goodness. So Nick Novak is a big part of the problem. Obviously, you know, he's not good, and Fairbairn not being able to beat Helm is a big deal. I think that's a really huge loss for the team that we still have Nick Novak still on the roster. But when you look at the numbers, when you look at the Football Outsiders numbers, the punt numbers look bad. That's Shane Leckler. Kick return numbers look bad. They're pretty much worse in the league as well. And that's Tyler Irvin not being able to do jack on kick returns. Our kick team is not good. Well, that's Nick Novak. The only place we were looking good is punt returns, and I bet you most of that is from Will Fuller's returning for the touchdown. But is that what you really want your number one pick, returning punts in the NFL? I mean, that's not a risk I personally would like to take. So, you know, this has been some really poor special teams play in a lot of ways, and really and honestly and truly having Shane Leckler and Nick Novak on the team and then allowing Tyler Irvin to still return punts is a big part of the problem. It's not part of the solution. Now, what's going to be interesting is the Texans signed Wendell Williams to the big slot today, which I'm sure he's going to have to do something with Jalen Strong, right? Does Wendell Williams start to see returns with Tyler Irvin being so absolutely terrible all year? And you've got to make a change at whomever's doing returns, because Tyler Irvin is no Akeem Hunt. And we've got to do something about that. He is single-handedly is killing us. And at some point, he's going to cost us a game with a turnover or just something else really stupid that he does.
Yeah, I don't know. The thing is, I liked Tyler Irvin whenever he came out of school, watching his film against Auburn and Oregon State. And I think he's a good running back, but I don't necessarily think he's a good special teams player. So I don't know exactly what's going on there. I still hope that Irvin may become a good player one day. But you're right. He hasn't been good this year. And you also have a similar player with Hunt, too, as well on the team. But so right now, Houston's 5-3. They're in first place. They're a game and a half up on Indy, who's 4-5. Tennessee, who's 4-5. And Jacksonville, I believe, is 2-6 or 2-7. I can't remember if they've had their bye yet or not. But so right now, do the Texans win the division? Yeah, they're 2-6. So right now, do the Texans win the division? How do you think the playoffs turn out if they do? And also, what do you think their record ends up at the end of the year?
I'm going 9-7. I mean, I just want to state this. As much fun as we've made of Blake Bortles today, and he's seriously regressed this year, he's got an 80.1 quarterback rating, and Brock Osweiler's a 73.1. But I just want you guys to keep that in mind. It's hard. At Jacksonville is how we come back off the bye week. And so I look at that and say, that is a game. If we don't win that game, then I think we lose the division. I think that if we have to sweep Jacksonville, Indy, Jacksonville, Tennessee, I think we have to sweep those four games to wind up 9-7. Because when I look at Oakland, San Diego, Green Bay, and Cincinnati, all those out-of-division games, I don't see as Oakland, San Diego, or Green Bay being winnable. We're going to beat Cincinnati because Cincinnati, hopefully. But all those teams are far more well-coached than ours is, and they all have a far better quarterback than we do. And so every one of those games looks really extraordinarily tough. Yes, Green Bay has not been great this year. They're just 4-4. They still have Aaron Rodgers. They still have some players, and they're going to be much healthier when we face them, most likely. So if we don't beat Jacksonville on Sunday, then that's the time to start thinking, well, we're looking at probably an 8-8 season, and we're not going to win the AFC South, and we're sure as hell not going to make the wild card.
Yeah, I mean, to make the playoffs, you have to win the division. I was looking at the playoff odds from Football Outsiders. Yeah, they have a 44.5% chance of making the playoffs. and like a 43.7% chance to win the division. So there's like a less than 1% chance that they're going to make the playoffs unless they win this division, which is kind of spectacular. I have them at 9-7 also. And I mean, just after looking at all the regression numbers, like I am really worried about them not winning this division. And I think they can still win even if they lose this weekend. I won't go that far. But I do think the season's going to come down to week 17 against Tennessee. I really think those four games are going to be tough. And I think they're going to go 1-3 against Cincinnati, San Diego, Green Bay, and Oakland just because they haven't played well. And I haven't seen really any improvement at all on the offensive side. I don't think the defense is going to get better necessarily. I think they've kind of hit their peak unless, you know, Jadon Clowney and Winnie Merciless will start really rushing the passer well. But what do you think the Texans' record is going to be in those four out-of-division games against Green Bay, San Diego, Oakland, and Cincinnati?
I think 1-3 is a fair guess. Cincy is kind of like our firewall opponent that we just seem to be. We need to sign T.J. Yates, let him quarterback that game, and just head home with an easy victory.
Yeah. That's what's so weird about Houston, Cincinnati. It's kind of like in Pokemon Red, whenever you draft Squirtle and you fight the first badge, and like you got water and you against rock and you just blast them away. It's pretty much the same thing. Like for whatever reason, they just get they just are able to blast Cincinnati. But I think it's gonna be a lot tougher than what we expected entering this year. And the AFC South has played better. They've been fun. I've been kind of surprised by Jacksonville. I thought they were gonna be a better team. And Tennessee's defense, their secondary specifically, has been a lot better than I thought, too. But now we'll go ahead and get some awards really quickly, and then we'll preview the game against Jacksonville. And so I just got, I think, six of these. I'll look into them one at a time. So what's been your favorite play so far this year?
This is just going to reek of schadenfreude. And you know what? I'm cool with that sometimes. But I think my favorite play this year was the opening game against the Bears where Will Fuller drops an easy touchdown. To me, that's like the season right there. It's just kind of – that's what the season's been. It's been an easy play there because of our talent level, because of what we thought was going to be our speed, and he blew it. So it's – this team has far too much talent to be a 5-3 team, and I'm sitting here talking about how 9-7 is a pretty likely outcome for them. It's to me, it's 100% on Bill O'Brien. The offense is terrible. And that's on him. He's the offensive coordinator, right? It's not Godsey. Romeo Crennel doing his job once again, even without J.J. Watt. So this one's totally on Bill O'Brien. And so that one play, taking the wide receiver that you wanted, the fast guy, the guy who's going to blow the lid off your offense, and he drops an easy touchdown. That's my favorite play, dripping a schadenfreude at the end.
Yeah, I'm similar, except mine is the Osweiler throw fumble for 7 yards against Denver. That was farther than his average yards per attempt. So he had 4.4 yards an attempt that game, and he threw a fumble farther than that for 7 yards. And I think his average completion that game was 6.9 yards. I think he threw a fumble farther than his average completion too. But that was my favorite one by far. And both these are very symbolic of how bad this offense has been. Again, it's 32nd EVA this year. They're 30th in points scored a game. Who's your MVP of the season?
If I really – well, obviously you're asking me, so I'm going to have to make a dadgum choice. I'm going to go with it's hard. For me, it's really between A.J. Bouye and Bernardrick McKinney. And so I'm going to go with McKinney just because he's seen the field more. He's throwing a lot of things. He's easily leading the team in tackles. He has been a beast – getting to the quarterback. That was not really a skill I expected from him just yet. He has been decent in pass coverage. He's been making plays there. When he does blitz the quarterback, he does kind of have a tendency to pick up the additional blocker. So they're using him in a lot of A-gap type stunts along with either one of the defensive ends or somebody like one of the other linebackers. And he's able to just create havoc once he starts hitting the line because he's so big. So that, to me, I'm
going to
go with McKinney as my MVP.
Yeah, I'm going AJ Bouye because the strength of this team has been the secondary. AJ Bouye he's come out of nowhere. He's also been the best cornerback on this defense too. And it's just one of the just strangest things like I can remember. And maybe he's having like a Bryce McCain, Brady Anderson sort of season. this year, but I mean, he's just been spectacular so far, so he's my MVP. My next one is, what has been your biggest problem so far this year, slash what has you worried the most?
Even please, the offensive incompetence. I mean, this is a team that literally looks flat every week. I mean, if they come out in a game outside of the Chicago Bear game and then they went completely stale afterward, you know, have they come out in a game and looked confident? And the answer is not really. I mean, we got, you know, almost a quarter of play out of Brock Osweiler against the Colts when all of a sudden he pulled his head out of his butt. That's still different. So to me, it's easily the incompetence, gross incompetence of the offensive play, the poor decision-making, personnel decision-making when it came to Jeff Allen and when it came to Brock Osweiler, that, you know, you create your own situations by making extremely poor decisions. And to me, those are two just extreme, wow, you know, decisions that I don't know if Brock Osweiler could have been avoided. Again, I understand that. But giving up Brandon Brooks or Jeff Allen has been a disaster zone. And so, once again, if you're going to blame your offensive coach for that, that's Bill O'Brien.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, mine's similar too, but mine's about the amount of time spent to build up to this point. And so this team, you know, we waited, I guess, two whole seasons for this, and this is what it's all kind of culminated to, the worst offense in the NFL. The last 2 years, they've had a top-10 defense, and we were just waiting for a quarterback. We were waiting for offensive investment, and they went ahead and did that, and it's produced just the worst offense in the league, and there's no other way you can spin that whatsoever. And so that's my thing, is that they've wasted 2 years of J.J. Watt's prime. They don't have them all this year. They don't know how good he's going to be in the future. They wasted 2 years of a top-10 defense because they didn't make any changes or any decisions then. And they were forced with Osweiler, I think, in a lot of ways this year. I was fine with the Osweiler decision because they had to do something, and this is what it's turned into. And so mine is picking back off the earth, but it's just the amount of time that, you know, we lost those last 2 years, you know, building up to this point that has, you know, resulted in nothing. What's your favorite Texas-related thing that there has produced? So whether it's a tweet or a GIF or a meme or an article, or, you know, what have you. What's been your favorite internet thing that's come out this year? Internet content, I guess.
So I'm not a brown noser because this is a true story. There are two things I've loved this year. I've loved your writing. Your article today was fantastic. I think you having, you know, the time to write has been a great boon to, you know, people's knowledge. And the other thing is Uprooted Texans Ministry of Information posts are just fantastic. They're just wonderful. I know he's listening in. This is not kissing butt or anything like that. They are just, both of those things are just that kind of good.
Thank you so much. It means so much, this cold, scabbed, you know, cat ball ridden heart, clogged up these aortas. But I was going to say the same thing. Uprooted Texans post has just been, you know, awesome every single week. And I really enjoyed all the crying Jordans after the loss to the Patriots on Monday night and I think my favorite one was the one where they went to tackle Jacoby Brissett on that like 27-yard touchdown he had where he broke like three tackles at the end, and they just crying Jordan every single one of them. And so I've waited so long to see a Texans player crying Jordan, and those were all, you know, really beautiful too. But and my favorite non-Texans one was when we had all those beer cans that came out for your team, and when the Jaguars have the funniest, you know, Twitter people. And because that's the one thing they get to live for, you know, because they don't win any games at all. And it was the Jaguars Bud Light can, and it said, like, your team sucks, and the caption was not cool, you know, Bud Light. And I thought that was really hysterical.
That's awesome. I didn't see that one.
Yeah, that was a good one. Who's been your favorite non-Texans team or non-Texans player this year?
That's a really good question. And, you know, again, once again, you know, Matt prepped us on the show. So I had this. We're going to play the team in the second half, and it's the Oakland Raiders. I think they're a fun team to watch. I really enjoy watching Khalil Mack. We've had a lot of discussion on our listserv about Clowney versus Mack, and, you know, would any GM trade Clowney for Mack straight up or vice versa, how that worked. But they're a very talented team. Their defensive line aside, well, I mean, if you consider Mack as a linebacker, their defensive line has been pretty bad this year. Their secondary is a nightmare. That offense, though, is a ton of fun to watch. Latavius Murray is fun. Amari Cooper's fun. Michael Crabtree has settled down into the Anquan Boldin role as a wide receiver. They're a talented team, headed in the right direction, and I think a lot of it's just simply because they have a stability at quarterback. And they're also stable because they do the small things to keep Derek Carr clean. For example, that team will trot out six offensive linemen in a passing situation. So they're willing to take a guy just flat out off the field, take the threat away even, in order to keep Derek Carr clean. And that, to me, is important. Again, you win football games in trenches. You keep your quarterback clean, you get your other quarterback dirty. And that all happens in the trenches. And that's, to me, Oakland's strategy has been able to pull that off with a good vision and plan.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that was really what was beautiful about what Oakland did is they knew that, you know, Carr has problems against the pressure. He had problems with that in Fresno State. And so rather than say, hey, we're going to, you know, teach him or keep him back there, whatever, let him wait, they just invested all their resources, a majority of the resources into their offensive line to put him behind, you know, what is the best offensive line corner pressure rate this year, so he can just put his arm to work. And whenever he's just sitting back, you know, playing pretty much backyard football, he's one of the best quarterbacks in the league in that way. And so it's just such a good example of utilizing your, you know, your player's strengths and you're maximizing what your best players are good at doing. Mine's kind of different in some ways. So, like, you know, watching coaches film, watching, you know, the condensed games this year, my favorite player I've watched this year has been Jay Ajayi, and the Dolphins' offensive line in the run game has been really spectacular. And, like, you wouldn't think that at all, but, like, it's been so much fun these last 2 weeks. So, like, Laremy Tunsil is the first offensive lineman who's supposed to be, like, a generational prospect who actually looks like it. You know, Eric Fisher was supposed to be. Jake Matthews was supposed to be. Greg Robinson was supposed to be. But Laremy Tunsil is like, he's that guy. Also, you know, Brandon Albert is an underrated run blocker. So is Juwan James. Mike Pouncey is probably like the quickest center in the league. You know, he's not very strong, but he's so good getting the linebackers, getting on space. And, I mean, they open holes for Ajayi, but, like, Ajayi just is so fast and quick, and he has such good vision. It's like watching, like, a more uphill Arian Foster in some ways. And so it's just been, you know, awesome watching that team just run the ball the last 3 weeks.
That's funny that you said. Isn't he also on your fantasy team?
Yeah, no, I drafted him in both my leagues and dropped him in both of them.
Oh, that's right. I forgot. Okay.
Yeah. And, you know, I really need some new friends if I'm watching, you know, Jay Ajayi as much as I have. I'm probably the only person in America who's watched him that much, aside from, you know, Dolphins fans. And so now we can go ahead and move on to, you know, our quick preview of the Jacksonville Jaguars. And so, you know, Blake Bortles was a project coming out of college. It was supposed to take some time for him to develop. Then year three, he still has accuracy problems, and he's still really stupid. He just makes some really dumb throws. And so are you Alan Bortles at this point?
You know, it's year three. He's got things to turn around, but he's got time to turn it around this year. But you have to really worry about the regression from last year. He put up like a 93 quarterback rating last year, something like that. And that was up from 75 or something like that in 2014. It would have been nice if you're a Glitter Kitty fan to see some consolidation of that talent, even if he doesn't move to 100 this year. Even just being at another 93 would have been adequate and fine. But this year he's been at 80. But you hit it exactly. He really makes three or four just horrible decisions, game in, game out, and that doesn't seem to be changing. And I don't know if that's maturity. The other way to look at it though is that he plays for a really stupid team, and Gus Bradley is an awful coach. So if at some point does he get a team that can really work with him and utilize his talents better, but they seem to be doing even a pretty good job of that. So. It, you know, we talked often, you know, Blake Bortles went, fifth in that year in 2014 draft. There's a lot of question coming from, you know, his college experience, if he was going to be a good pro quarterback. He was, you know, had his issues, especially accuracy issues in college. And so far it's looking more like a miss than a hit, but at least it's not a swing and a miss.
I don't know, but it's all right. It sounded cool. You saying Gus Bradley calling the Corpse. I really want to read some Jaguars fan fiction of As I Lie Dying, where Gus Bradley, you know, dies, and Blake Bortles has to build a coffin for him, and then the whole Jaguars team has to, you know, carry his body to the town adjacent through the flood to make sure to be able to bury him in his home grave, in his hometown. And And it definitely ends with Allen Robinson going crazy and losing his mind, like Darrell does in that book. But, I mean, my thing with Bortles is that, you know, it's year three. I think no matter what, he's so frustrating, and he shows, like, enough arm strength and, like, those quarterback, you know, physical traits that I think he's going to get to play his whole rookie contract out. He's going to start next year, maybe not year five because they have to pick up that option. But they also don't have a run game for him at all. And I think that's also kind of thing, too, like we talked about, where I think Bortles should be a successful quarterback in this league if he just has to make, like, three or four downfield throws a game. If he doesn't have to be the one who has to consistently, you know, making quick passes to lead efficient, you know, time-consuming drives. So he's not that quarterback at all. And so I really wish they could trade him to the tight end to Mariota to Jacksonville. I think both those guys would flourish in those two different situations. And so I think Bortles is kind of in a bad place for himself. And, you know, Jacksonville just – they don't run the ball well enough for him.
No, and part of that's the offensive line. You know, they tried to address it with Kelvin Beachum, and he hasn't – he's coming off a major injury, and he hasn't looked the same. Outside of Beachum, there's a lot of, you know, expected to be struggles. It's once again, it's a team that drafts poorly. Tyson Alualu, of course, Brian Anger's the funny one. They don't draft very well anyway. They don't have a lot of depth, and then they renew guys. So they went out and signed – to try to get better on the defensive side of the ball. They signed Malik Jackson. They signed Prince McNamara. They at least tried, and they're going to get the green ribbon for that. But they still defend, you know, and they're fast. I mean, they're fast as all heck defensively. They're 15th in the league this year defensively. In 2015, they were, like 26, so they have gotten better defensively. So you go back to what has been the thing that's really regressed and gotten worse, and why are they 2-6? And you have to point at Blake Bortles. T.J. Yeldon, once again, taking a running back that high, maybe not the best strategy. He's not a very good pro running back, and that's really all there is to it.
Yeah, I mean, I think they pass block well, but they just run block, you know, really badly. And they actually did pretty well against Kansas City last weekend. It was really surprising, but it's like, don't sign Chris Ivory to that contract. Get two offensive guards. Get a guard and a center for that contract. It's such a better use of your resources and your assets. And I think that's been kind of the biggest problem is they can't interior run block whatsoever. And so this week they're going – I think they had 180 rushing yards last week, which was like the most they've had since Maurice Jones-Drew was there. But this week they're going into bad Texans run defense. Do you think Jacksonville's going to continue the success on the ground at all against Houston?
I think so, but it depends on what your meaning of success is, because the problem is that T.J. Yeldon has a negative 42 DYIAR, which is fourth worst in the league, and Ivory is negative 59 at worst in the league. So, you know, that's a combination of not being good running backs and, you know, not having a good rushing offensive line. But, hey, if there's a team they can beat, we're going to give you the Houston Texans, because, you know, the run defense has not been very good this year.
Yeah, I'm hoping to see a lot more DJ Reader this week because I know Will Fork's coming off an injury, and I just think in general, like, Will Fork is just old, and, like, his body type doesn't really, like, it's not a type of position where you can play for long stretches when you're just a man that size at that age. And so I'd like to see a lot more Reader this week, too. And I guess going to offense, like, the Jaguars are top 15 DVOA. They're the best tackling team this year. I know they've had problems in the past covering DeAndre Hopkins. But, like, you know, Prince Mukamara has been very good. Jonathan Safran's been a lot better since he's been able to come down, play in the box, and stop the run. Tashaun Gibson has done a very nice job, you know, stopping the deep pass. So, like, we haven't had a full four quarters from Brock Osweiler. Do you see it happening at all this week?
No. No, Brock Osweiler needs to put together two quarters before he can put together four. I mean, maybe he does. Maybe Bill O'Brien has completely revamped the offense. Oh, it's – but we need to do a time check. But, you know, he's completely revamped the offense, so maybe we look better. Maybe Tom Savage goes out there and Brock Osweiler can really kick some butt on Matt in 2017. But I just don't see – I don't have any evidence that I can look to and point to for Blake Bortles and say he is going to be an NFL-quality quarterback. I don't see it. Game in, game out, I do not see it. So, no.
Yeah, for me, it's those things where I'm not going to think it's going to happen until it actually happens, so I'm going to say no to. So right now, we're both 5-3 as we're playing for, you know, some secret present at the end of the year between both of us. We need to come up with a name for it, too. But we're both 5-3 right now. So what's your prediction for this game?
Yeah. is this where we diverge a little bit? I'm going to take Jacksonville.
I don't know.
I just don't even know how to feel about the Texans right now. It's because if I'm the opposing coach and I see what I see out on the field, I'm going to run the ball down your throat. I'm going to make your tight ends cover Julius Thomas. And I'm going to make you beat my fast defense and force you to throw the ball underneath all game. I'm going to go 17-13 Jacksonville because I just think that's where we're at as a team. Of course, now we're going to turn around and win it, 23-6 or something like that. But I'm going to go 17-13 bad guys.
Yeah, I'm going to Houston 23-20. And this is kind of probably a game where they actually have some turnovers. And, Bulls has been so bad this year. And, this could be a good Jacksonville team if Bulls made, the stats mediocre this year. And he hasn't done that. He's been too inconsistent. I think the pass rush will be good enough. Merciless usually plays very well against Jacksonville. And I think Andre Howell maybe has an interception or two. And I just think Bulls has too many interceptions. And they play too sloppy to win this one. And Houston wins a close game 23-20 because that's all Houston does nowadays. But that's all I have for tonight. Do you have anything else at all?
No, I got to split.
Yeah. Well, thanks for being on tonight, BFD. Thanks for listening, everyone. I'm sorry we didn't get to, a few of y'all's questions tonight. Like I said, we were trying to make this thing exactly an hour long, and we went over by 1 minute. So if this was like a speech paper in college, then we would have lost I think it's like a point every 10 seconds or so. It's maybe like 60 seconds. But anyway, thanks again for listening, everybody. We'll be back on next week, Tuesday at 7 p.m. Central, where we'll talk about the Jaguars game. We'll review that one. We'll preview Monday night in Mexico City against the Oakland Raiders. And thank you for being on BFD tonight, and thanks for listening, everyone.
Woo!